match. Klomp mense het so gegiggel op my toe en hoor ek tweeling. Wat is die snaaks daan?
Thank you very much for the invite. It's nice to be here, to be back. I've got a presentation on this. Let me just see who the audience is. I just want to get a bit of a feel. Who are economic students here? Let me just see. Where are the economic students? Come on, man. Stay cool with the consumer. Do we have some lecturers here? Economic lecturers? Particularly? Oh, and also economic dissenters and so on. So, Nopian. So, I better watch out what I'm going to say. Okay. Well, the budget. Let's have a look at the budget. Now, I remember, you know, the problem with economic studies quite often is that you, and it's not only with economics, quite often with just about everything, you look at the specific topic and that's what you study. And that's the thing that you don't really look at it in the context of, in the case of the budget, for example, in the context of the South African economy. I call my presentation a deficit, this saving and depreciation, because what is happening in the budget has got a huge impact on things like, for example, exchange rate of the currency. And something else that I'm quite concerned about is that if you listen to the minister's budget, and afterwards I listen to the comments by the different political parties and some even economists and so on, what I'm very concerned about is that not one single spokesperson from a political party said anything that I think was worthwhile. I don't think they understand what's going on. And as far as I'm concerned, the budget goes to the heart of a democracy. It is your responsibility to know what's going on in the budget, because that's what you're voting about. Because you are saying in the budget where you want the minister to take your money, because your money, well, that's called government revenue, that's a misnomer, it should be called state revenue, but politicians like to go, they say we spend it, government spends it and this and that. It's not government spending anything, it's the state's money. It belongs to you, not to the politicians. But anyway, it goes to the heart of a democracy. It's your responsibility to know what the other guy's going to do, the other political party's going to do. Because that's why you draw your little cross. Because that's what it is. This is what democracy is about. Other things as well, but this is the heart of democracy. So let's see what's going on. Let's see if we can pick up a few threads. And let's see if we can figure out a little bit what the Minister of Finance is trying to tell us. And very importantly, what he's not telling us. Because he's a politician, of course. This is just some economic big numbers that I'm not going to go through all of them. I just want to touch on a few of them, a few important ones. And then I'll start digging into the budget itself. Economic growth, the GDP, that's a very important number. The GDP last year, 1.9%, more or less than we expected. Now this is our estimates for the next couple of years. We expect for this year, for example, economic growth about 2.5%. The minister is a little bit more upbeat. The years thereafter, the minister is, as usual, quite upbeat as well. Interesting thing about economists, not only economists, but if you look at big economic institutions like the Monetary Fund, International Monetary Fund, or the World Bank, or Treasury, whenever they make predictions about things like economic growth, it's always up. They never predict recessions. Never. They always predict stronger growth going forward. Always. I mean, and exactly the same with the Minister of Finance. Now, we're not that upbeat. We don't think economic growth, in fact, 2.5% I think is a little bit on the high side. We think economic growth is going to be a little bit weaker than that. But this is very important, economic growth, what it's going to be. Because especially for state finance, or government finance as they call it, it is particularly important because a lot of ratios are calculated as a percentage of GDP. So for example, the fiscal deficit, the difference between how much is spent and getting in, is always expressed as a percentage of GDP. Now the fiscal deficit can be exactly in line with the budget, but if the GDP is smaller, then the ratio is going to be bigger, going to be worse. Okay? The same with debt levels and so on. So economic growth is important because of the ratios, firstly. And secondly, economic growth is very important because as the economy slows down, the minister collects less taxes. And that will put him in a bit of a predicament as well. So those are the two very important reasons why GDP growth is important. I'm going to have a look at it a bit later. So economic growth, I think it's too optimistic of the Minister of Finance. I think 2.5-3% over the next couple of years, which is simply just not good enough. We need to grow the economy at a much, much faster pace. Another number is CPI, that's inflation. Around about 6% or so, I agree with the Minister of Finance roughly. Could go a little bit above that or below that. I'm not too concerned. The thing is, the moment we see a stronger demand coming back in the economy, that's going to push inflation up a little bit more. But inflation around about 6, I agree with it. The last one, and I'll touch on that a little bit later as well, is our current account deficit. Now we've got a lot of deficits in this economy, all sort of deficits and imbalances. And that current account deficit, that reflects a lot of imbalances in the economy and will come back to that. I can just tell you, there are a couple of ratios that are bad numbers, like the deficit, for example, the fiscal deficit, the current account deficit is another bad one.
These numbers, are bigger than economic growth. Like that one, for example. I mean, in absolute terms. That one is 6%, this one is 2.5%, that's a bad number. If they're more or less the same size, then it's okay. But if a deficit number relative to GDP is bigger in absolute terms than economic growth, then all sort of distortions appear in the economy. Right. Now, before I'm just going to get a little bit technical to explain to you what we're talking about. Because the Minister of Finance, being a politician, is a very sharp guy. He's a real technocrat. And he's the Minister of Finance, he can decide whatever he wants to include in these different numbers. Now, there are certain definitions for certain items on the budget, like, for example, the revenue, or the spending numbers, or the fiscal deficit, and the like. What do you include? What is revenue? Now, if you look at the Reserve Bank's definition and the Quarterly Bulletin of the Reserve Bank, they follow a specific definition for revenue and expenditure, and the deficit and the debt numbers, for instance. And those are the numbers that are followed mostly by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and the like. And those are the numbers I prefer to see. So there are different definitions. So let's just make sure that we know what we are talking about. First of all, you get different taxes. Now, there are a number of taxes. There are three major taxes: personal income tax, value-added taxes, corporate taxes, and a lot of smaller taxes. Do you know there are 100 taxes in nationally? We've got 100 taxes. We've got plenty, many taxes, but three major ones. So all these taxes put together, that gives you the tax revenue. And then there are a lot of non-taxes, like fines and levies and licenses and all that. You add that into that. And then you have to subtract the South African customs union payments to the other countries around us. And that then will give you the so-called main budget or national budget revenue. That's actually the number I prefer to look at. Because where are you going to stop? Must you include Sasol's deficit on their pension fund as well? Or should you include in revenue the profits on the premiums on state debt, for example? And yes, the minister decided that he's going to include some of these other items. Like, for example, the unemployment insurance fund, or the road accident fund. Those funds are autonomous, they're not run by the Minister of Finance, and quite coincidentally, they always run services. So that means the minister includes that, his numbers look a little bit better. Which is pure coincidence. So, okay, there we have it. So we've got to consolidate that, and this is the numbers of the Minister of Finance. Alright, so I'm not saying he's a clever guy. So here I've got a summary of different deficits. In the end, you've got state revenue, state expenditure, which you can include certain things or not. Then you have the fiscal deficit, the difference between the two, and we express that as a percentage of GDP. Now that's the one I'm looking at. So in the current financial year, remember the state's finances start on a very appropriate day, and that's the 1st of April. And it ends the end of March. That's his financial year. So the current financial year, the fiscal deficit, the way I calculate that, is going to be 5.1% of GDP. Then, of course, the minister includes certain things, and he looks at not really the deficit, but the net borrowing requirement. And the deficit gets a little bit smaller, and then he consolidates all these numbers, and he gets a little bit smaller still. Alright, so that's the number that was in the newspapers. And that's the number everybody is jumping up and down and saying, listen, this is a good number. It's only 4%, which is actually not a good number because it's still much higher than GDP growth. But the actual number is actually 5%, depending on your definitions. But it's neither here nor there. Alright, let's have a look on what's been happening on the state's finances the last couple of, quite a lot of years. When you talk about state revenue, and quite often if you listen to the minister and you listen to academics, when you talk about state revenue, you take the total state revenue, however your definition is, whether it's taxes or indirect things or whatever, and you express that as a percentage of GDP, and that is your tax burden on your economy. That is wrong. That's the wrong way of looking at state revenue. Because state expenditure, that's the number to look at, because that is actually revenue. If they explain why I said so. They spend so much, they get in so much. You can't look at this number relative to GDP as the burden. You have to look at this one. Because the difference they borrow, and the difference that they borrow is simply a postponement of taxes. Because you're going to pay for that, some time or the other. So the actual tax burden is total state expenditure. Now let's see what's been happening. 1960s, the state was about 16% of the economy. Today, we've got it about double that size, in excess of 30% of the economy.
those are the estimates of the Minister of Finance going forward, and he says he's not going to increase state spending anymore, he's going to keep it relatively flat. Now, a couple of things politicians tell us. Remember, they work for us, we pay their salary. But one thing, especially Minister of Finances are very keen on saying, is that if we all pay our dues, we will all pay less. That's what they always say. That is a lie. It doesn't work like that. If we pay more, we simply spend more. That's how it works. There's a lot of theoretical and empirical evidence for it. Now, let me show you. For instance, in the 1970s, the gold price went through the roof. The Minister of Finance made a lot of money. At that stage, gold income from the Minister of Finance was much more than today. And see what happened? They simply spent more. The only guy who really cut back on state expenditure was Trevor Manuel during that period. And that was a liberation organization that took over government finances with a lot of political pressure on them, a lot of social pressure on them to spend, spend, spend. And he did not. He actually cut back on state expenditure. And he did that. And if you listen to Kusal, to these funny guys at the Red Berets and so on, talking about neoliberalism. I'm sure you heard of that. Now, the real neoliberalist was Trevor Manuel. He was in the real neoliberalist. Because what he did, he privatized a lot of state assets and he took this money and paid off state debt. And if you pay a debt, you pay less on interest, and in the process your total expenditure goes down. So what he did as Minister of Finance, he actually increased taxes as well. So he increased taxes a little bit, he cut back on state expenditure, and in the process, the state was getting smaller and smaller, and with that the fiscal deficit was getting smaller as well. And once he consolidated things, and we could actually afford it, he started increasing state expenditure on that social expenditure on which there was so much pressure on the Minister of Finance. Something different between him and the current Minister of Finance is that his bosses, Mandela and Bekele, gave him a lot of political support to do these sort of things. It's difficult to do this. So I kind of support that this guy is not getting it enough. Alright, so he started increasing, especially social expenditure, but something Trevor Manuel did wrong. He forgot to spend money on capital expenditure. He forgot to maintain capital, and he forgot to invest more in capital, and in the process the roads started collapsing, Eskom went to pot, and then we know what happened there. Now we have to pay tolls to fix our capital infrastructure. But anyway, it actually did quite a good job. Now, after the financial crisis, Pravin Gordhan took over as Minister of Finance, and typically what the Minister of Finance will do after the financial crisis, he will increase state expenditure, because taxes fall away automatically. There's an automatic system called the automatic stabilizers. So typically what will happen is state will become more expansionary when the economy slows down. But what's supposed to happen, the moment the economy starts picking up speed, the minister is supposed to become more contractually to pay off state debt. So you're in trouble, something is going wrong, you've got to fix the car, it's a crisis, you use your overdraft, and once you've used your overdraft, your car is up and running again, now you work a little bit hard to pay off your overdraft. That's how it's supposed to work. Doesn't work like that in practice, of course, but that's how it's supposed to work. So that's what's been happening with state finances the last couple of years, and we doubled the size of the state the last 50 years. Okay, if you subtract the one from the other one, you get the fiscal deficit, and these are our fiscal deficits. Fiscal deficits are the amount of money that you borrow. And it really depends on where you spend your money. If, for instance, you borrow money on a mortgage to build a new room for a new baby, that is cool, because you borrow money to invest in capital. If, however, you borrow money on your mortgage to go to Mauritius to make the baby, that's not good. That is current expenditure. That's the difference between them. Now, what's been happening, I'm going to share a little bit on that. What's been happening in South Africa, depending on where you are on the cycle, we've been borrowing a lot of money to spend on long-term, or rather short-term expenditure. What happens also, if you borrow long-term money, spend it in short-term expenditure, you're actually destroying savings, destroying capital. So this is the fiscal deficit, the number of fiscal deficits. You can all see with economic growth around about 2% to 2.5%, so the fiscal deficit is currently bigger than that. And that's the minister's own estimates. I think it could be a little bit worse than that. But there are the different cycles that we've had of the different ministers of finances. If you, now this is a little bit technical, if you take the effect of interest out of that, you get a so-called primary deficit, and the primary deficit, this is the really bad one. It means this is the discretionary part of the fiscal deficit, if you like. So the Minister of Finance is intentionally running a relatively large fiscal deficit. That's basically the point. And those are his estimates going forward. So clearly looking at this only, one must come to the conclusion that the fiscal debt numbers could not be looking that good. you keep on running at these sort of deficits, you must be accumulating a lot of debt. I'll get to that just.
Alright, let's have a look at some changes to some taxes in the Minister of Finance's budget. The Minister of Finance is a clever guy, he's got a lot of economists working for him, the Reserve Bank assists him, I can remember, and there's a mistake in my CV, I worked at the Reserve Bank for 9,000 years actually. So, I remember the time at this South African Reserve Bank, we assisted Treasury as well, in making all these decisions. So, there's a lot of econometric models and all sort of thumb-sucking and getting together and all the estimate what's going to happen to the different taxes, all of them. And when these tax collections deviate from what you've expected, then there must be something happening in the economy that is different from what you expected before. So let's have a look at what's going on in different taxes. This is in total stat revenue in the current financial year will be more or less in line with the original budgeted estimates, which our models also told us beginning not too long ago. On personal income taxes. Personal income taxes, the most important tax, expect about 3 billion more than the original budgeted estimates. But what is that really telling us? And a couple of very interesting things are happening globally and in the South African economy. We're not employing that many more people in South Africa. And anyway, if we do create jobs now and again, it's usually sort of a lower income category. We don't create, or so we thought. And until you really unpack the numbers, and you will find that certain sectors in the economy are doing very well. Especially finance, for example, that you know, guys shifting the money around. And you need guys with a lot of good qualifications to run that, to run the banks and to do the investments and so on. People that come to work in the efficient group, for example, they're very, very well qualified, well remunerated. So well qualified people getting nice wage and salary increases. And that's a very important reason for this overrun in personal income taxes. Companies. Company tax is about 7 billion. More than originally estimated. Now, we are currently in our third industrial revolution. The UK in the 1700s went through an industrial revolution, and if we go through that industrial revolution, what happened is that it was the revolution of mass production. A lot of people moved into factories, into the cities, and they started working there. If you analyze this additional production that took place in those economies, it was fairly equally spread between the workers and capital. Of course, it went through a bit of an adjustment phase. The capital took more than the workers. And that's a time when later on in the 17th and later in the 1800s in the United States, you saw the same sort of, similar sort of thing. And that's where Karl Marx got all these ideas. Okay, about capital, living capital, and labor. And how this production was spread between capital and labor. But essentially what happened is that labor got their share of the new production. The increase in production. What is happening today is, especially after the financial crisis, companies cut back wherever they could in terms of costs. They fire a lot of people. We saw a huge increase in unemployment all over the globe, not only in South Africa, and they started spending more money on capital, more on machines. And only people, not only machines, but machines like computers and all that, and only people that are very well qualified with very special skills can run these machines. And they get huge salary increases. And we get this gap between the haves and the have-nots widening up even further. There are other factors at play as well. Things like quantitative easing is supporting the financial markets mostly, putting up asset prices, like financial assets prices, but pushing back up. And people that are not involved in the financial market are losing out. But what we're currently seeing is all these trends are working against people without very good skills. I'm not talking about qualifications, I'm talking about skills. So it's important to make sure you guys have good skills. And that's part of the thing that we can see companies getting becoming more profitable. Our companies in South Africa has got between 600 and 700 billion rand in cash in the balance sheets. So they're creating all this money, all this cash surpluses, and they're putting it in the banks. But the funny thing is they're not paying our dividends. Tax on dividends will be about 6 billion, so below the original budgeted estimates. A very important one for that as well is that our most important export product is platinum. And what's happening on the platinum mines? They're striking, they don't produce, we don't export, they don't make profits, and we don't pay dividends. Which is actually a good thing, because most of those dividends would have gone to foreigners, by the way. Would have added to the current dividends. Because they added tax about 4 billion or so over the original estimates. What we've seen is the South African economy is driven by one major engine, and that's consumption expenditure. People buying and selling stuff and spending, you know, that's what's keeping the economy going.
And that's going to be pushing the economy to current, which is not very strong levels of growth anyway, but the growth that we've experienced for most because of consumption expenditure, spending in the economy, and that is clearly running out of speed now. The toll roads and petrol prices going up, interest rates going up, all these sort of things. The consumer is not what the consumer used to be a year or 2 years ago, and we can already see that in VAT collections slowly coming under some pressure. And then some other taxes I'm not going to go through. This is some changes to some of the SIM taxes by the Minister of Finance. These are actually small SIM changes to SIM taxes. I've calculated the real increase, you know, adjusting inflation and so on. Beer, malt beer is getting, in the real terms, more expensive. So I'm just picking up the important ones. Beer, sparkling wine about 4% up in the real terms. I'm particularly concerned about that one because that's whiskey. Personally, that's the thing that's going to affect me, I think. All right, so those are just some of the SIM taxes. Wednesday, the petrol price will go up by 36 cents a litre, you all know that. The 2nd of April, it will go up by an additional 20 cents a litre. 12 cents will go to the fuel levy, and about 8 cents will go to the road tax. So it's going to be, we talk about what's a 56 cents a litre increase over the next 2 months. Thereafter, it depends what's going to happen to the exchange rate and the oil price. This is 50 years ago, what did the composition of different taxes, what did it look like? The most important tax was personal income taxes, followed by value added tax, and then company taxes were always the same size, and a couple of smaller taxes over there. That was 50 years ago, and this is what it looks like today. Pretty much the same. One difference, company taxes contribution a little bit smaller than 50 years ago, and that's because worldwide taxes, the tax burden of companies have been reduced, because everybody's trying to make the allure the companies all over the world into their economies to come and invest in. So that breakdown is more or less the same, just a different thing. Number of the registered taxpayers in South Africa. The top one there is companies, just over 2 million. This is individuals. The reason for the sharp increase in individuals has to do with a change in legislation that whether you're a taxpayer or not, you have to be registered. That's just a technical thing. But there are a number of taxpayers registered for different things. The different marginal top rates for the different taxes in South Africa, the top rate for individuals is 40%, which is, I'm going to share in articles of comparison, and the top rate for companies is about 20%. It's of course not the effective rate is slightly different, but the rate for companies is slightly different. And then some other taxes. There's one at the bottom, is taxes on pension funds that were abolished not too long ago. So no real changes to taxes, that's the major ones, that's I think important. Interesting, this is an interesting graph from 1880. See how long it goes back. This is the UK, the United Kingdom, that's their tax burden as a percentage of GDP. That one over there, that is Sweden. This is South Africa, this one, that's gold sort of color, yeah. That's India, the one below that. Now, I just want to show you this graph because it's not only a South African phenomenon. Globally, the states are getting there. Politicians are sticking their fingers in more and more things in the economy. They want to take more taxes out of the economy. They want to rule and run our company, our lives more and more always. So stop this. Stop this. Let's see if we can stop this. But they trade this. Right, that is South Africa's tax burden. 100 years ago, it was at 10%. Today it's at 30%. That's it's going to be bigger in the next 10 years than the 10 years they are. That's how I mean, it is. The tax burden, the past since 1994. Can you see there was a fall in the number of taxes from about 2007-2008 over here, that foreign tax collections, and that was the financial crisis, of course. The financial crisis, if the economy slows down, tax collections come under pressure as well. But the nice thing about this is the automatic stabilizer. It reduces the tax burden, so you can actually get more stimulatory fiscal stance, provided you turn it around once the economy turns off. So clearly, so that's not a reduction in taxes, it's less tax collections, but because of the recession, not because of low tax. Okay, then I just want to show you something. We belong to a club called the South African Customs Union. There are a number of countries in there, South Africa, Swaziland, Namibia, Lesotho, and Botswana. And we all contribute to this big pot of money. Whenever you import something to these different countries, you put your money into a big pot, and every 3 months, we sit around this pot and we dish it out again. So we distribute it amongst all of us. Let's just see who pays and who gets. South Africa pays 37 billion rand into this pot, and we dish it out to the other guys. How much do the other guys get? South Africa gets a minus, because we net contributors.
Swaziland gets about 20% of the economy, 20% of GDP. We give dividend for free, gratis and for niet. We simply transfer the money to them. And then maybe it gets about 10%, Lesotho gets about 25%, and Botswana about 10%. They give it to them. So as a percentage of their budgets, what does it look like? I've made the necessary adjustments, don't worry you guys. As a percentage of GDP, of their budgets, Swaziland, of the total budget, nearly 80% of that comes from South Africa. A transfer. Namibia about 35, Lesotho about 50, and Botswana also about 35. That's our transfer. Which was a very handy tool during the time of the National Party, because you could use this to put some pressure on the neighboring countries to help you out a little bit politically on one or two things. But now we have it. And I'm not necessarily against this, by the way, because if we stop doing this, I mean, the rest of the people that are still left in those countries will probably come to South Africa as well. that is South Africa's contribution to the region. Personal income taxes, that's just some changes that's taken place. Let me show you one or two things. Now, remember, it's always, like I said, it doesn't make really sense to look at one topic only. You have to look at it in a perspective to see how it fits in the rest of everything. But there's something that usually you hear from the politicians, and especially the weird organizations like the labor organizations and so on, saying that taxes got to be progressive, which means that if you're wealthier, you have to pay more, not only in absolute terms, but in relative terms as well. So your tax burden's got to go up. Now, a personal income tax, the most important tax, is by far the most important tax to the Minister of Finance. Now, those number of people, approximately 10% of people, earn 400,000 rand plus per year in South Africa. That 10% of people pay 60% of total personal income taxes. So the personal income tax in South Africa is highly progressive. Other taxes as well. And what people quite often forget, the expenditure side of the budget is also highly progressive. All this money basically goes to the poor. But I've done 1.5% of people earn more than 1 million rand per year. And on that little slice up there, 1.5% of them earn more than 1 million rand per year. And of that, 1.5% pay 25% of total personal income taxes. So if we increase, and I'm going to show you a little bit later, if we increase the tax burden on that small number of individuals there, are we going to get more tax? The answer is no, because there are not enough of them. Really simple. I'll show you a little bit later. I just want to illustrate the highly progressiveness of South Africa's tax system. Not only the personal income tax, but the whole tax regime. This is the marginal rate of individuals, about 40%, compared to the 35% in the United States, which is an advanced economy. The Japanese, they pay more, they pay 50%. But some of Australia a little bit more. But compare South Africa to Indonesia, for example, India, Brazil, Botswana, Australia, that's also a developing economy, but the tax burden is high. But anyway, so South Africa, if you compare South Africa to our peers, our personal income tax marginal rate is high. So we're certainly not under-taxed overall. We pay too much taxes. So the minister, I don't know if you've seen the newspapers, the minister gave us 9 billion rand back. Can you remember? 9 billion rand, you're going to get 9 billion back. Well, don't hold your breath, you're not going to get a check in the post. The adjustment was about 5.4% in most of the categories, while the inflation rate is going to be more than that, 6.2% based on the minister's own estimates. So we tried to address the effect of bracket creep, or fiscal drag, nothing to do with quotes. How did it work? Fiscal drag means that if you get an increase in your salary, quite often you fall into a high income tax bracket, and the Minister of Finance will adjust this bracket to prevent you from paying only taxes on inflation, essentially. That adjustment was not enough. So we had an increase in personal income taxes. So that 9 billion that he gave back, he didn't give 1 cent back, I promise. The lower income categories did get something, but that's a group personal income tax credit, you got nothing, zilch. Let's have a look at companies. Now, the reason why I've got that little arrow there is because on top there, there's a purple, this color, line there, that you can't see. Because there are so few of them. This is corporate income tax. Now that little slice over there, they pay 60%, more than 60% of corporate taxes. In fact, 0.1% of all companies pay 64% of all corporate income taxes.
Now, if you make these guys angry,
you know, if you make the Implats angry because you don't want to give them a mining license,
or the big guys, South African breweries, or Sasol, or those sort of big tax base, if you make them angry, they're going to go away. You must make life very easy for them.
You must be very nice to them.
Because they give you the money that you want to spend on all sorts of other things.
That.
I told you earlier that consumption expenditure is that engine that drives the South African economy, the emission. So that's usually a good, and this is just VAT collections on economic growth. And quite clearly we can see VAT collections slowing down. And that's telling me that the economy is again not going to have a really great year. Spending. Now, the politicians like to say that the private sector has been on a spending freeze or a spending boycott or investment boycott. They don't invest. Let me show you the actual numbers. This is how much the state, the central government, is spending on capital investments in South Africa. That's the part that the state-owned enterprises are spending on investments in South Africa. And that's the part that the private sector is spending on investments. So clearly, it's untrue to say that the private sector has been on a spending boycott in South Africa, investment boycott. They are most definitely investing. They are basically by all of these investors. But keep in mind that they have 600 billion rand in cash on their balance sheets, that they wouldn't mind investing, provided that the environment is such that it's a good idea to invest. And it's not always so. The environment in South Africa isn't always a very conducive environment for business to do business. So that's the investment. Who's doing the investment? I'm going to come back to that a little bit later because that's important. Some other expenditure numbers. The grants, by far the biggest item that's been growing on the minister's the spending side of the budget, that increased by closer to about 7% above the inflation rate. So what we have, taxes were addressed not enough to address inflation, were adjusted not adjusted to address inflation, but social expenditure were addressed more to than enough to compensate for inflation. And the election, of course, nothing to do with. Okay, and in fact, if you look at the minister's own estimates for the next 3 years, he expects the social expenditure, especially the grant expenditure, to keep on going up at that rate in excess of the inflation. So it's not only this year, in years to come, he expects an increase in that as well. Where is the social the grants going to? Mostly to children. There are about 12 million children receiving grants. I'm not against these sort of things, people. I'm just, my job is in the farmers, I want to give you the numbers. Because sometimes you want to spend so much, you do certain things that eventually going to damage your core economy when you're there. Let me show you. That's the number of people employed in South Africa. That, let me put it in differently. That's the number of people with jobs in South Africa. That line of this is the number of people receiving grants from the state. This is the ratio between the two, 2001. In 2001, there were more than three people that work for one person receiving a grant. Today there's less than one person that works for one person receiving a grant. This is not sustainable. That is, it doesn't matter how you look at it, it is not sustainable. That's the reality of life. Something else that I'm very concerned about, and that's why I'm so critical on our political, our opposition political parties, they didn't pick this up. This is the most important number. How much money does the Minister of Finance, how much does he owe? What is the total outstanding debt of the fiscus? Let's see. In 2009, it was 600 billion rand. The minister's own estimates, and I think he's over optimistic. In 2007, and that's not too long from now, 3 years from now, it will be 2.2 trillion rand. As a percentage of the economy, it will move from 27 to 48%. It's not going to go to 48. Because in 1 year, the minister adjusted that number, where it's 48, and in 2016, his expectations were put. He adjusted that up by nearly 4% in 1 year. So if he adjusts it up by another 4% at next year's budget, we will be in excess of 50% of the debt levels. I'll come back to that a little bit later. Now, more or less. Okay, I told you that we've got a number of deficits in the economy, sort of imbalances in the economy. Now here's a very important imbalance. We import more than what we export. That's an imbalance. That's how it is. What does it mean if you import more than you export? You get a huge current account deficit. What does this mean? It means you consume more than what you produce. That's what the current account deficit is. It's like
You've got 100, you're a farmer, you produce 100 bags of wheat, but you eat 106 bags of wheat. You can only do that if you borrow 6 bags of wheat from your neighbor. That's what we do. In fact, that's more or less the numbers. We consume 106 and we produce 100 and so on. And that's your current account deficit. That's another big deficit that we have. Another deficit is that we save so much and we invest so much. And our investments are not even good. We need to invest much more. But we invest more than what we save. And that's another deficit that we have. We've got a savings deficit. We need to increase our savings in order to fund all that sort of stuff. Now, this graph essentially tells us that because we've got a current account deficit, it means we don't save enough, which means that we are dependent on foreign capital flows into South Africa, and which also means that the moment the capital flows out of South Africa because of tapering by the Americans, they're printing less money, the money leaves the South African economy, the rand goes for a loop. And that's what's happening at the moment. Part of the reason why the rand is under pressure is because we don't save enough. Why we have a current account deficit, why we import more than what we export. And then we can quite clearly see that the moment this money that we've borrowed from abroad, the moment it leaves, the currency comes under pressure as well. So who are doing the savings? Let's have a look at how. There are three savers in your economy. Households. This is how much households save. Little, tiny amount of money. In fact, very few individuals can retire financially independent because we just don't save. Households don't save. This is the savers by the corporates, that companies. We know companies save. Don't the companies save? They save quite a lot of money. And they are only the real savers in the economy. And that one over there is our dear minister of finance. And again, you notice there's the zero line. So he's below the zero line. That means he's a destroyer of capital. So depending on how you calculate that, but that amount of money is 100 billion rand. So the Minister of Finance destroys, where we're not even good savers, but that chunk, he destroys 100 billion rand of that, of our savings, he destroys. Which I accept, which is fine, provided he turns it around. But the economy starts picking up as well. This is it. Now, can you remember? You won't remember. But in 1994, something happened in South Africa. Now, it was very important for the government then, in 1994, to sort of, to try to get some people to vote for them. As many people as possible. And you do that by spending a lot of money and make sure that the taxes are not too high. In other words, you run a current account where you run a fiscal deficit. And that's what they did. They ran a nice big fiscal deficit over there. That was for political reasons, which didn't help that much because they're gone today. Anyway, so another political party took over, and you can see we went into a recession by the Minister of Finance now, 2007-2008. He ran a fiscal deficit, but now that we're back in economic growth, we're supposed to run back to fiscal surplus, to at least a primary surplus, and it's not happening. That's a problem. I don't have a problem with catching the economy, counter-cyclical fiscal policies, but then you have to be counter-cyclical during the upswing as well. And that is not happening. Okay, now what's been happening on the spending side? Huge increases in social protection, there's different grants, I've showed you that already. But people misunderstand we've actually spent less on education expenditure. We still spend more than most countries on education. We spend, for instance, $1,200 per child per year on education. Mozambique spends $400 per child per year. Mozambique's literacy and numeracy rates in grade 3 is better than ours. And they teach the kids under 10 years. So it's not money. We've got another problem. And I've got a suspicion Satu is part of the problem. Okay, anyway. Defense is significantly less than where it was or something. So one can understand. A huge chunk of total state expenditure, between 30 and 40%, goes to salaries on civil servants. Before I get into trouble again, there are many civil servants in South Africa that are totally underpaid and overworked that should be getting much better salaries. But let's be honest, the majority of them are overpaid and underworked. The civil service in South Africa is the single biggest threat to the South African economy. It's like a wet blanket that you throw over the fire of entrepreneurship. They're smothering this economy. Go anywhere. Go to the local authorities, provinces, go to anywhere. The service you get stinks. And they're between 30 and 40% more remunerated than equivalent silver private sector. We overpaid them. The Minister of Finance said,
This is the red one, this is estimates. We're only going to pay them this year more, and then from next year onwards, their proportion,
the year thereafter, will fall.
Yeah. Alright? So, how can we fix this problem? So, we've got a problem. We've got debt levels going up, we spend too much on current expenditure, we don't spend enough on capital, the tax burden is just not high enough. Let's see how we're going to fix this problem. Let's put some solutions on the table. Can we spend less on current expenditure? Because we need to cut that back. Can we spend less on education? Can we spend less on social grants? Can we spend less on civil service salaries, for instance? Of course we can, but do you think we're going to? I don't think so. Because it's just too difficult. Telling a civil servant that I'm not going to give you a salary more than inflation, I'm going to give you 3% increase. They're going to touch the streets again. Can we spend more on capital? We can't. We can't spend more on capital because simply there isn't money around. And this is our debt levels. This is the state debt levels. It was the last time we were here was in 1994, 1995, 1996. This is estimates, very optimistic estimates. It's going to go past 50% within 3 years. So there's just not more money. We can't just borrow money. We owe too much money already. This is just a debt level. So, by the way, South Africa's debt. This is South Africa's debt as a percentage of GDP, close to 50%. But look at the United States, in excess of 100%. UK, 100%. Japan, 250%. So it's much higher than ours. But what people forget to tell you, when Barack Obama, when he borrows money, he pays 2.5% for it. When the UK, when they borrow money, they pay a little bit more, 2.8%. When Japan borrows money, they pay less than 1% for that money. When we borrow money, we pay 8.5%. So it's not only the debt levels that matter, it's the price, the cost of that money as well. But anyway, look at Nigeria, for example, Indonesia, China, Botswana. Botswana, by the way, with very low debt levels and lower. Anyway, so but their debt levels are much lower than ours. So our peers, debt levels are much lower. So we can't cut back on spending, so can we get more taxes in it? Yes, we can. Now what we've done now, just go back. What we have done here, let me just zoom in, get a better picture. What I've done here, this is just the different income tax brackets in South Africa. The top right is 40%, and the bracket just below that is 38%. Now what's going to happen if we increase this 38% to 45%? And the marginal rate of 40%, we're going to increase that at 55%, a huge increase in personal income tax bill. Let's do that. Let's see what's going to happen to taxes. And then it's just a straight line calculation. So obviously, if you tax people more, they're going to work less, they're going to immigrate and so on. I didn't account for that. So what's going to happen to taxes? The Minister of Finance will get about 38 billion extra in, and that's about 5% of total taxes. So it will make a difference. But you're probably going to lose a lot of people. Alternatively, of course, we can look at some other taxes. We can increase corporate income tax, which will not make much sense because our corporate income tax levels are already relatively high compared to many other countries in the world. So that's not going to be a very clever thing to do. So what about if we do something else, we increase value-added tax, which is a very difficult tax to increase because the poor is going to, Kusatu is going to nail you if you do this. So what we've done, we moved the value-added tax rate from 14% to 20%, let's see what's going to happen to collections. And again, this is a straight line calculation. It will probably be less than this. But it will give you an excess of 100 billion rand, which is equal to about 17%. So the point I'm making, if you want to change taxes because you want to get more money, the only real tax that you can change is value. The other taxes, when you can increase a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and increase cigarette prices, but that's small fry. It's not going to make a difference to the total tax collections. Okay. Now, let's summarize the whole thing. We've had substantial changes to the way the fiscal finances have been run in the last couple of years. One of the guys that did an excellent job was Trevor Manuel, but Trevor Manuel had a lot of political support. It's difficult to cut back on spending and increase taxes, for example. Ravin Gordhan, since the financial crisis, the timing of Trevor Manuel was absolutely perfect. He left just when the financial crisis happened. Ravin Gordhan really, he inherited quite a problem. You need to make certain adjustments, and I'm afraid we had the opportunity the past 5 years to make some adjustments. I can understand to run a huge fiscal deficit during times of recession, but the moment the economy starts picking up,
even slightly, we can't afford it anymore. And we've had this massive inflow of capital into South Africa the last few years because of quantitative easing in the United States. The gold price going through the roof, all sort of wonderful things. That was the opportunity we had to make some structural adjustments in the economy. And it's not only about taxes and state expenditure. I mean, we need to make some other changes on labor legislation, for example. We have to do something about education, the quality of education is terrible, and many, many other structural adjustments. Now that the rand is under pressure, now that the tide is going out again, you can see it means swimming naked. And I think a lot of people mean swimming naked. So it's much more difficult to make the necessary adjustments under the current circumstances. But it's not all doom and gloom. The economy is probably going to do a little bit better this year, not because of macroeconomic policies, but quite often despite that. But South Africa is quite well positioned. We position in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa is the strongest growth region in the world the past 10 years, people don't realize that. South Africa, in fact, is pulling the region's growth down. But sub-Saharan Africa is doing well. Do business with Africa. But more importantly, we're nicely in the middle between the West and the East. We've got a wonderful, sophisticated economy. We've got exceptionally well regulated financial markets. And we're in a position where we're a real political heavyweight, South Africa, for the size of this economy. And we're very close to the Chinese and the Indians and the old Soviet Union, Sub-Saharan Africa, of course, and South America. And that's where the growth is going to come from. It's not going to come from the United States. They get a bit of a short-term economic growth. It's just not sustainable. They don't have much money. They're going to get into trouble. The Europeans, the troubles are only starting up. Look what's happening in Ukraine, for example. So that's not where economic growth. Or Japan. Japan is a bug in search of a windscreen. They're in real big trouble, those guys. But the growth is certainly going to happen in places like where we are. So South Africa is a really well position to capitalize on all these wonderful opportunities. But I'm so concerned, I'm so worried about, is that we don't take the necessary political steps to make these unpopular, to take these unpopular decisions in order to create many deficits in the South African economy. Okay, that's my story. Thank you very much for the opportunity. If there are any questions, we can get to that, but that's our pay offline. That's our pay offline, all right? Got it, the fishing group. If there are any questions, I'm more than happy to take those. Thank you very much for listening. Any questions? Okay, there's going to be a short test now. No questions. That was easy. But there's one, yes, sir.
I'm not from here. I'm from Europe.
What country?
From Germany.
Oh, well, you don't need to know.
You say that the share of government spending compared to the economy is too large. What happens if you have one party that says we shrink that, another party which says we grow that, meaning we take care of this business, and people actually vote for that second party?
Yes.
What's your argument?
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem. I've got a suggestion. And by the way, I've got a suggestion in my book on that. You see, let me just repeat what you just said, and just tell me if I understand correctly. What you're saying, you want a political party is in power, and they increase the size of the state, and another political party get elected because they say they're going to shrink it again, and once they get elected, they suddenly keep on increasing it.
No,
is that what you're saying?
I mean that voters actually want
yes.
governments to take care of
the voters vote for that political party that's going to spend more money on it and going to government taxes. I've got a suggestion on that. We have many countries in the world that have got an independent monetary policy authority, like for example the central bank. The central bank is independent. They've got targets to set inflation, usually it's inflation target or an unemployment target or both combination. Why can't we create a similar institution? Let's call it the currency board, let's call it the fiscal board. Now my suggestion would be give a tax, typically say the value added tax, one tax. Put that under control of a totally independent body called the fiscal board. Their job is to always run a fiscal surplus over the cycle. So whenever they see, and they're not elected, that's important, they're like the reserve, that's their target. Their target is to run a fiscal surplus. And they simply adjust value-added tax. Doesn't matter what the Minister of Finance does. He can do whatever he wants to. They only have got one instrument, that's VAT or whatever, and adjust that to run a fiscal surplus over time. My suggestion would be 1% over the cycle, and you pay off state debt in the process. That would be my answer. And then, because that's a problem with democracy. Democracy will keep on voting in the populist politicians, and they will not necessarily do the right. That's my answer. Here's another one. Yes, ma'am.
So what do we need to do?
individual. Well, state finances or the economy, they all work exactly the same as the finances of an individual. The only difference is how long the numbers are. So my advice to an individual will be to make sure you have a plan, a life plan. And in your life plan will be things like when I'm going to go on holiday, when I'm going to buy the next SUV, whether the kids are going to go to school, where they're going to go to school, how many kids they're going to be. If there's a surprise in the Sunday queue that you didn't expect. So that's a mistake. And included in your plan must be a budget. And your retirement plan. So have a plan. And make sure that everybody in your family knows what the plan is. Let them all give their inputs into the plan and revise this plan at least once, twice a year. With a financial advisor if you don't have that. Start preparing for your retirement and start preparing for your retirement the day you start getting your first paycheck. So that's my advice for an individual. Plan these sort of things. And it doesn't mean that you don't overplan, of course, you have to live in the meantime as well. But make sure that you have a bit of a plan. Don't really get caught out by unexpected things.
Colleagues, students, I know that Darby has to rush off at 12:30. So sorry, I think we'll have to cut you short now. I think this was by far the most popular event that I've ever organized, Darby. I don't know whether we're feeling the pinch in our pockets or whether it's you. I think it's maybe you. So thank you for saying yes immediately when I asked you. I really appreciate that. And we've got a small token of appreciation for you. I think you can guess what it is. I had a talk with your PA. You also referred to it. And all that I can say is when my husband has a good whiskey, he shares it with no one. If it's not a good whiskey, he takes it out for all our friends. So I would love to know what you're going to do with this one. But thank you.